should on me, she said defensively. You don't know anything about my life or where I've been. Mariba was silent for a long moment, and Angel regretted her harshness. You're right, Mariba said finally. I don't know all the circumstances, but I do know the little Joseph told me. What did he tell you? Angel said, hearing the brittle tone in her voice, but unable to ease it. Troubled, Mariba looked at her sadly. That your husband took you out of a brothel. He fell in love with you the first time he saw you, and probably loves you still. Her words sent a shaft of pain through Angel. Love doesn't last. She didn't know how much showed in her pale face. Mariba's face softened. Sometimes it does, if it's the right kind. Angel lay in the darkness after Mariba left and worked over what she had said. Mama had worked to keep Alex Stafford's love alive. She had tried everything to please him and keep his passion alive. Angel wondered now if it hadn't been those very efforts that served to drive him away. Mama had been so hungry for his love. Her entire life had revolved around Alex Stafford's coming to the small cottage. Her happiness depended solely on him. It had been an obsession. How was what she was feeling for Michael any different? She couldn't stop thinking about him. Her heart longed to be near him, to hear his voice, to see his eyes light up when he looked at her. Her body ached for him, for his warmth and his touch. Her emotions were in turmoil. She told Joseph in the morning that she was leaving. "You can't go," he said, clearly very upset with her. "Mariba hurt her back last night, didn't you, Mariba?" Mariba looked confused. "You can admit it," he told her. She spread her hands. "See," Joseph said, "and I've got a shipment out back. I can't get it all on the tables by myself." "All right, Joseph," Angel gave in. "But as soon as that's done, I have to leave." She set to work immediately, in a hurry to finish the project and be on her way. Joseph kept telling her to take it easy. He didn't need another woman with a pulled back. When they stopped for dinner, he poked over his food for so long Angel was exasperated. When she got up to go back to work, he told her to sit down and finish her coffee. If he was in such a dither about getting his merchandise out, why was he wasting so much time? And nothing seemed wrong with Mariba's back when she rose and took the heavy platter from the table. When they set back to work, he said he changed his mind about where he had put some lanterns and wanted to move them to the other side of the store. The merchandise on the table he chose had to be moved, too. She did as he said, feeling more and more tense as the day went on. "Get out of here, Angel. Go, now." But she stayed, working with Joseph, wanting to finish what they had started, even if he was changing his mind every half hour. What was wrong with him today? Joseph laid his hand on her shoulder. "That'll do for the day. Why don't you close up?" "It's early, isn't it?" "Late enough," he said, and smiled. He signaled for Mariba and his mother to come, and they went through the back curtain together. Frowning, Angel turned. Michael was standing in the open doorway. Chapter 23 From the Song of Solomon, Chapter 4, Verse 7 You are all fair, my love. There is no flaw in you. Angel froze in shock as Michael walked toward her. He was covered with road dust, his face lined and grim. Joseph sent word you were here. Her heart was galloping. Why did you come? To take you home. She backed away from him. I don't want to go back, she said, wanting to sound firm and indifferent, and sounding neither as her voice shook. He kept coming. She bumped into a table of boots, sending several thudding to the floor. I knew you wouldn't go back to paradise, he said. She gripped the table behind her for support and stood her ground. "What made you so sure?" she mocked. He didn't answer. She couldn't read the look in his eyes. When he reached out, she held her breath. He touched her cheek tentatively, and she pressed her lips tightly together to keep them from trembling. "I just knew, Amanda." Unable to bear the rush of emotions, she pushed past him frantically. "You don't even know why I left you." Michael caught hold of her and swung her around. "Oh, yes, I do." He pulled her into his arms. "You left because of this." He covered her mouth with his. When she tried to push free, he cupped the back of her head. She struggled harder as the betraying warmth stole over her. When she stilled finally, Michael slipped the bandana off her hair. Pulling the ribbon loose, he raked his fingers into her hair and tipped her head back. She could feel the fierce pounding of his heart beneath her palms. "That was it, wasn't it?" he said hoarsely. Ashamed, she tried to turn away, but he wouldn't let her. "Wasn't it?" "I don't want to feel this way," she whispered brokenly. Someone cleared his throat. "Is the store still open?" Michael turned, his hands sliding down her arms. He squeezed her hands gently before releasing her. "No, it's not. Sorry." He crossed the room and politely showed the prospective customer out the door. He closed it firmly after him, set the lock, and flipped over the sign in the window. When Michael turned, he saw Amanda at the back of the store. She stooped over for something near the Franklin stove. He followed and saw she had a carpet bag and was gathering her few things together. His mouth tipped. "We'll go home in the morning." She wouldn't look at him. "You go home. I'm going to San Francisco." He clenched his teeth, striving for patience. Her face was so white and strained. When he tried to touch her again, she moved quickly, putting a barrel between them. She was stuffing her clothes into the bag frantically. "You're in love with me," he said. "Do you think you can run away from that?" At the words, Angel froze, her head down, her hands gripping the bag tightly. She was shaking violently. The effect he had on her was shattering. She began stuffing her clothes into the bag again. The sooner she got away from him, the better. She was trying to stuff her feelings in along with them. "I told you I would never let myself fall in love with anyone, and I meant it." "But miracle of miracles, you did, didn't you?" he said, as determined and relentless as ever.
"Go away, Michael."
"Not a chance."
"Just leave me alone."
She rolled up the last skirt and jammed it in with the rest of her things. She snapped the bag shut and glared up at him.
"You want to know what love feels like to me? It feels like you're ripping my heart out."
His eyes flashed. "It started feeling that way when you left, not when you were with me." She tried to move past him, and he blocked her way. "I saw the way you started looking at me, Amanda. I felt the way you responded that last night. I felt it all the way through me."
"And it gave you a sense of power, didn't it? Didn't it?"
"Yes," he admitted roughly, and caught her arm when she would have retreated to the back door. "But it's not a power I'm going to use against you."
"You're right," she said, trying to tug free. "I'm not going to give you the chance."
He yanked the bag from her hand and sent it bouncing off the back wall. "I'm not your father. I'm not Duke. I'm not some gent paying for half an hour in your bed." His hands tightened on her arms.
"I'm your husband. I don't take what you feel lightly. I love you. You're my wife."
Biting her lip, Angel forced the tears back. Michael gentled. He cupped her face so she couldn't look away from him, and saw her heartbreaking struggle against her emotions. Emotion had always been her enemy. She couldn't allow herself to feel if she were going to survive. He understood that, but he had to make her see that it wasn't an enemy anymore. "Amanda, I knew the day I saw you that you belonged with me."
"Do you know how many times men have said that to me?" she said, wanting to drive him away. He went on doggedly as though her words hadn't stabbed at him. "I've loved watching you grow and change. You're never the same. I love the way you take on new things, your drive to learn. I love how you work, how you have this little girl look on your face when you finish something you've never tried before. I love watching you skip across the meadow with Ruth. I love seeing you laugh with Miriam and hang on Elizabeth's wisdom. I love the whole idea of growing old with you and waking up to you every morning for the rest of my life." "Don't," she whispered brokenly. "I haven't even started." He shook her tenderly. "Amanda, I loved giving you pleasure. I loved feeling you melt. I loved hearing you say my name." She blushed, and he kissed her. "Love cleanses, beloved. It doesn't beat you down, it doesn't cast blame." He kissed her again, wishing he had the right words to say what he felt. Words would never be enough to show her what he meant. "My love isn't a weapon, it's a lifeline. Reach out and take hold and don't let go." When he drew her into his arms this time, she didn't struggle. When she put her arms around him, he sighed, the stress of the past weeks dissolving. "This feels good, doesn't it? And right." "I couldn't stop thinking about you," she said miserably, pressing closer, inhaling the sweet scent of his body. She had missed this feeling of safety that only came when she was with him. He was so determined to have her. Well, why not let him? Wasn't that what she wanted? To belong to him? To stay with him forever? Wasn't this what she had longed for every moment since she had left him? "You make me hope, Michael. I don't know if that's good or not."
"It's good," he said, holding her close and rejoicing at her admission. It was a beginning.
They left at first light. Angel rode behind Michael, her hands tucked securely into his belt. He said little other than to ask how she'd made it to Sacramento. She told him in detail about old Sam Teal and his hard luck. He laughed when she told him about selling the pans at the mining camp. She laughed, too. "I didn't think I'd be good at anything."
"I'll let you handle business with Joseph next time we bring in a shipment of produce."
"Joseph's a different matter altogether. He wouldn't be so easily blinded."
"He likes you, you know."
"He does?" She was oddly pleased. "I thought he let me stay as a favor to you."
"Partly. He said he knew God had his hand on you when you walked in the door that day."
Angel didn't answer. She didn't think God had his hand on anything that had to do with her. He had washed his hands of her long ago. She slid her arms around Michael's waist and leaned her head against his strong, broad back. She was perilously close to crying. Shaking, she felt a nebulous fear gnawing at her. Michael sensed it, but waited until they stopped for a rest to talk about it. Dismounting, he lifted her down from the horse. Tipping her chin, he searched her eyes.
"What is it, Amanda?"
"It was pure luck that I found Joseph when I did, Michael." Michael knew it was far more than that, but telling her wouldn't make her believe it. Angel didn't want to think of what might have happened if she hadn't found the storekeeper. She was so weak. It was a loathsome thing to face about herself. One day on her own and she would have walked back into a brothel. One day. Maybe not even that long. "You saved me again," she said, striving for lightness. Embarrassed by her vulnerability, she looked away. Michael tipped her face back. Oh, his eyes. So full of hope. So full of love. "I'm only a tool, beloved. Not your savior." When he took her in his arms, she went willingly. They remained until dusk and rode the rest of the way home in moonlight. Michael set to work on the fields, making the final preparations before planting. Angel helped by toting stones and breaking up clods in the grain fields.
When the day came to plant, Michael loaded the seed and Angel onto the back of the wagon. He told her how to sow the wheat, then drove back and forth over the ground. She cast the seed, doubtful anything would come of it. Planting the corn was more work. Michael trapped fish and chopped them into large chunks to be buried with the kernels. It took from dawn to dusk to get the field planted, but when she looked out at the rich ground, she felt satisfied. The next morning, she saw a flock of birds in the wheat field. Dropping the water bucket, she ran into the field to chase them away. Laughing, Michael rested his arms on the corral fence he was fixing and watched.
"What are you doing?"
"Michael, those horrible birds! What are we going to do? They're eating every seed we planted."
She threw a clod at another bird, and it fluttered off, perching in a nearby tree.
"Just leave them be. They won't take more than their share."
She marched back.
"Their share? Why should they have any?"
"In fair payment. They're the guardians of the land," he pointed. "The swallows, swifts, and hawks guard the air, filling themselves on insects that would otherwise overload it. The woodpeckers, creepers, and chickadees feed on the grubs and beetles that would destroy our trees. The warblers and flycatchers feed on insects that attack the leaves. Grouse and prairie hens eat the grasshoppers that would devour our crops."
"What are those pecking out there?"
He laughed.
"Blackbirds."
"Well, they're good for nothing, aren't they?" "They guard the surface of the soil, along with the help of crows, thrushes, and larks. Snipes and woodcocks eat the bugs that burrow under the surface." He tugged her braid lightly. "Spare the birds, Amanda, or we'll lose our crops. Besides, I've got other things for you to do." He swung over the fence and swept her up in his arms.
"Michael, what if it doesn't rain?"
"It will."
"How do you know it will?"
He set her on her feet again.
"You're worrying about things you can't control. Just take things one day at a time."
It did rain in the weeks that came, softly moistening the earth.
"Michael, come and see!"
Green sprouts came up, and Angel walked up and down the cornrows with uncontainable excitement. The plants were so small and fragile, one hot day would wither them. But Michael didn't worry. He repaired the corral fence, finished building the spring house, and went hunting. He shot a buck and showed her how to dress it. They hung the meat in the smokehouse. Sometimes, when Angel least expected it, Michael would find her at her chores. "Let's find a nice place in the sun," he'd whisper, putting his arms around her. "Come away with me and be my love." They were lying in the hayloft one day when Angel heard Miriam calling.
"Oh,"
she said, mortified. Michael laughed, caught her around the waist, and threw her playfully back into the hay.
"Where are you going?"
"What's she going to think, you and me up here in the middle of the day?"
"Maybe she'll think we're pitching hay."
"Miriam is a very bright girl."
He grinned.
"Well, then maybe she'll go away."
"No, she won't."
She jumped up and plucked hay from her hair.
"Tell her I'm out hunting and you were taking a nap," he said, getting up and kissing the nape of her neck.
Blushing, she pushed him away. Miriam came into the barn and saw Angel descending the ladder.
"Oh, there you are."
"I was just napping," Angel said, flustered and pushing wisps of hair back. Miriam's eyes twinkled.
"Your fields are planted too, I see."
Angel cleared her throat.
"Yes."
"And growing nicely?"
"Shall we go into the cabin? I'll fix some coffee."
"That sounds nice," Miriam said and burst out laughing.
"Michael, Papa wants you and Mandy to come for dinner. We're going to celebrate our first planting."
Michael's answering laughter drifted down from the loft.
"Tell him we'd love to."
Miriam took Angel's hand as they left the barn.
"Mama's always flushed when she comes back from a long walk with Papa," she said. "The way you are right now."
Angel blushed.
You shouldn't talk about it so freely.
Miriam pulled Angel to a stop and hugged her hard.
I've missed you so much.
Angel hugged her back, her throat tight.
I missed you too.
Miriam drew back, eyes flooding.
Well, that wasn't so hard to admit, was it?
She looked very pleased. The Altman's own planting was finished, and Miriam said she had more time for herself. The children were fine. They had seen Paul several times. He helped them dig their new well.
Let's take our coffee outside and sit under that apple tree, Miriam said.
Michael was chopping wood. Angel called out, asking if he wanted coffee, but he called back no.
Mama's in a family way, Miriam said, as they made themselves comfortable in the shade. She always blooms when a baby's coming.
How's your father taking it? Angel asked, thinking of her own. Oh, he's very smug, Miriam said. She smiled impishly.
Are you and Michael working on a family?
The question sent a sharp pang through Angel. She shrugged and looked away.
Miriam took Angel's hand. Why did you leave? We were all so worried.
I can't explain, Angel said.
Can't or won't? Do you even know the reason yourself?
Partly. She wouldn't explain further. How could she, and make this naive girl understand? She was so open, so free. Angel wished she could be like her.
We never told Ruthie, Miriam said. We just said you and Michael were very busy, and we couldn't come for a while.
Thank you, Angel said. She watched Michael stacking firewood, her heart aching. Miriam smiled.
You're terribly in love with him, aren't you?
Terribly. I'm consumed with it. Sometimes he only has to look at me. She stopped, realizing she was speaking her most private thoughts aloud.
Miriam looked at her. Isn't that as it should be?
I don't know. Is it?
I hope so, Miriam said dreamily. Oh, I really hope so.
Miriam brought Ruth the next time. Angel left her gardening when she saw the child racing down the flower-strewn hillside. Dashing the dirt from her hands, she came through the gate and took a couple of running steps to meet the child.
Mandy! Mandy!
Ruth cried joyously, and Angel swept her up in her arms and hugged her.
Hello, darling, she said huskily, kissing the child on both cheeks and her nose. Have you been a good girl since I saw you last?
Yes, Ruth said, squeezing Angel around the neck again, as though she had no intention of ever letting go. Why did you run away? You were gone so long. Paul said you always run away, and Michael just keeps going and finding you and getting you back again. He said Michael's a fool, because you like your old life better than being a farmer's wife. What's your old life, Mandy? I don't want you to go back to it. I want you to stay here.
Angel set her down very slowly. Her stomach had dropped as soon as Ruth began parroting what she had obviously overheard.
We didn't tell Ruthie.
She couldn't look at Miriam when she came up to them.
What's the matter? Miriam asked.
When Angel didn't speak, she looked at her baby sister.
What have you been saying?
Angel touched Ruthie's dark head tenderly.
I love being a farmer's wife, she said very quietly, and I don't want to go back to my old life.
Miriam's mouth fell open, and her face went dark red. Ruthie nodded and hugged her around the legs. Angel looked at Miriam coldly.
What's she been saying to you? Miriam asked.
Just what she's heard.
Ruthie, just what did you hear?
You and Paul, she said, muffled against Angel's skirt.
Never mind, Angel said bleakly. Just leave her alone, Miriam.
I will not. You were eavesdropping, weren't you? Miriam said, arms akimbo as she stared down at her little sister.
Ruthie peered at her.
Mama sent me.
Her lower lip protruded.
She wanted me to fetch you.
When was this?
When Paul was over, she said you were gone too long, and she wanted you to come into the cabin.
Miriam blushed furiously.
And?
He was talking, and you were mad. I could tell 'cause you got all red in the face like it is now. You told him to take his stories home with him, and he said...
Angel put a shaking hand to her brow, her face very pale.
Never mind, Miriam said quickly, silencing her sister. She looked up, tears in her eyes.
Amanda.
Angel shrugged, trembling. Miriam pulled Ruthie away and gave her a light pat on the bottom.
Go say hello to Michael, Ruthie.
Ruthie chewed on her lower lip, tears building in her eyes.
You're not mad at me?
She bent down.
I forgive you. Now go on.
She kissed her little sister.
We'll talk about it later, Punkin. Go see Michael.
When Ruthie reached Michael, he swung her up onto the fence.
I'm sorry. Miriam was distressed.
Say something, Amanda. Don't look like that.
What was there to say?
Would you like some coffee?
No, I don't want any coffee.
When Angel started walking toward the cabin, Miriam fell into step beside her.
I was not gossiping about you, I swear it.
Neither was Paul, Angel said. He was just telling you the way he sees things.
How can you defend him?
I've hurt Michael more than once, and Paul knows it.
That doesn't mean you'll hurt him again.
It doesn't mean I won't.
Miriam and Ruthie stayed most of the afternoon, and all the while Angel couldn't get it out of her mind. Could she change? Was she different just because Michael loved her? Or was this just the quiet before the real storm? Michael knew something was wrong. A month of blissful happiness, and he could feel her drawing away from him again. He was afraid. Lord, don't let her pull away from me again. Help me hold on to her. Come here, he said, putting a blanket before the fireplace. She came willingly enough, but there was something somber and secret in her eyes. What was tormenting her? Angel leaned back against the solid comfort of Michael's broad, muscular chest. She loved his hands on her. What's wrong? He asked, nuzzling her neck. Something's been eating at you all evening. Did Miriam or Ruth say something to upset you? Not on purpose. She didn't want to tell him about Paul. She didn't want to tell him how much words hurt. She had denied their power all her life, but each name cut.
It's just that I'm so happy, she said, her voice shaking. I can't get over feeling that I don't deserve this.
And you think I do?
What have you ever done to be ashamed of in your life, Michael? Not a blessed thing.
I've committed murder.
He felt the shock go through her at his admission. She drew away from him and turned, eyes wide.
You?
100 times. When I came back for you the first time and saw what McGowan had done to you, and Duke, I've killed him 100 times in 100 ways, each worse than the last.
She relaxed, understanding. Thinking about doing something wrong isn't the same thing as doing it.
Isn't it? Where's the real difference? The same desire is there, feeding on itself and me. He tugged her braid lightly. Don't you see? Neither of us deserves this. It's got nothing to do with whether we do or not. Every blessing comes down from the Father, not in payment for good done, but as a gift.
Michael saw that her eyes flickered at his first mention of God. He felt her growing resistance. God, the foul word. God, the being that had no meaning in her life other than retribution for sins committed, some not her own. She believed God was wrath, and that he would continually punish her for living a life she was forced into by a seedy old drunk who didn't know what he was doing. God was unmerciful,
and enjoyed inflicting pain. How could he make her see that God the Father was the only escape she had from living in hell, when the only father she had ever known had wanted her ripped out of her mother's womb and thrown away? "Show me this father of yours, Michael," she said, unable to keep the edge out of her voice. "I am," Michael said quietly. "Where? I don't see him. Maybe if he stood before me, I'd believe he existed." And she could spit in his face for everything that happened to her and her mother. "He's in me. I'm showing him to you every hour of every day, the only way I know how. And clearly not doing a good enough job." She saw she had hurt him, and softened. He was so sincere. And he loved her so much. She loved him too, though she had fought so hard against it. He had made her love him just by being Michael. But that had nothing whatsoever to do with God. Did it? "Love isn't enough," she said, touching his beloved face. "If it was, I should have been enough for my mother, but I wasn't. I won't be enough for you either." "No, you won't. And I won't be enough for you, Amanda. I don't want to be the center of your life. I want to be part of it. I want to be your husband, not your God. People can't always be there for you, no matter how much they want to be. And that includes me." "And God is," she said derisively. "God was never there for me." She moved out of his embrace and stood, retreating to the bed. He watched her loosen her hair. She looked at him and went very still. "I'm glad you like blondes," she said mildly. She wasn't going to put him off that easily. "Your looks may have had a little to do with why I first noticed you," he admitted, standing up. He tossed the blanket over the back of the chair. "Only a little," she said, without conceit. Until Michael, she had always looked upon herself as fodder for a man's lust. "A little," he repeated firmly. When she raised her eyes, he gave her a solemn look that belied his mood. "Actually, I think it was your even temper, your willingness to adjust to my way of life, your constant desire to please me." He crossed the room as he spoke and sat on the bed beside her as she laughed. Her defenses dropped at his disarming smile. "So," she said, "you're just another bloke who rises to a challenge." Her smile faded, even as the words came from her lips. Why did everything she say have to brand her with her past? She looked away again and continued to unbraid her hair. His hand rested comfortingly on her thigh. Even that light touch made her melt inside. "What do you feel now that I'm soft clay in your hands, Michael?" "Joy," he said. "Pure joy." He saw how the pulse raced in her throat and pressed a kiss to it. He heard her soft intake of breath and felt the answering warmth spread swiftly through him. He wanted her. He would always want her. And praise God she wanted him as well. He felt it every time he touched her. "Beloved," he whispered, feeling an overwhelming tenderness at the look of uncertainty in her blue eyes. "If anyone knew how or why people fall in love with one another, they'd bottle and sell it off to one of those traveling medicine wagons. It wasn't how you looked. It isn't that you smell and taste so good to me now." "You know it isn't," he said, kissing her. "It's part of it," she said with a sigh. "God knows that's true, but it's something beyond just that. Something unseen. You cried out to me that day when you walked by, and I couldn't do anything else but answer."
"So you said before."
"And you still don't believe me."
"Oh, Michael, life's done things to me. I'm so full of..."
She paused, swallowing hard and pressing her lips tightly together, looking past him, unable to look into his eyes. "Of what?" He stroked the tendrils of hair back from her temples. "Shame," she managed thickly. Her eyes burned, and she struggled to push the emotions down again. She couldn't give in to tears, not even one, but she wanted him to know how she felt. I don't know what I did wrong. I never knew, but I understood from the earliest time I can remember that I was never going to be good enough to deserve a decent life. And that her very presence took away the decency of others. Would it take away Michael's eventually as well? She couldn't bear the thought of that happening to him. So how do you explain this? She reached up and touched his face. I don't. I can't. I just know it'll never last. Michael's eyes filled with tears. She broke his heart. She always had. I've never turned away from you, nor will I ever. It's always been the other way around.
I know, but if I gave you everything I had, it wouldn't be enough. I don't have enough for a man like you.
He took her hand and pressed it hard against his heart. Then take what you lack from me. Let what I have make the difference. Her heart was so full she hurt.
You're so beautiful, she whispered tremulously. How could she, of all women, be loved so much by a man like this? Oh, God, if you are there listening, why did you do this to him?
For you, beloved.
A shiver went through her body, and she felt the hair rise over her head.
Not for me. Never for me.
She closed her mind tightly to the still, quiet voice.
What is it? Michael asked, seeing her sudden pallor.
He was so handsome, but she was drawn to him for something other than that.
Maybe it was, as he said, something unseen. There was something inside him that drew her like a moth to a flame, but it was a flame that didn't scorch or destroy. It lit something deep inside her, so that she felt she was becoming part of him. He gave her life meaning. It wasn't a matter of survival anymore. It was something else she couldn't even yet define or understand, and yet it kept beckoning to her.
And what of Paul, Angel?
A frown flickered across her brow. Michael lay beside her and tipped her chin toward him.
Tell me.
She marveled at how he was sensitive to her every thought. But could she reveal this without driving the wedge in further between him and his friend? Paul wasn't wrong about her. He saw her as the rest of the world must, as a woman who sold her body for money and nothing more. She shook her head. Michael kissed her as though he wanted to give her his hope.
I wish I could change things, she said sadly when he raised his head to search her eyes. I wish I had come to you clean and whole.
So that I would love you more than I do now? He asked with a tender smile.
So that I might be worthy of you.
She drew his head down and kissed him.
I can give you pleasure.
You please me just as you are.
She wanted more than anything to please him in all ways.
Remember all I taught you, Angel. Duke's voice came unbidden. Use it, and use him.
When Michael smiled at her, the dark voice lost its power.
No barriers, Michael said. Nothing between us.
So Angel gave herself up. She had no thought for anything but Michael. She had always thought a man's body ugly. Michael was beautiful, and she worshipped him. Michael rejoiced in her. You're like the earth, the Sierras, the fertile valley, and the sea. He drew her up so they were sitting cross-legged on the bed, facing one another. She didn't understand what he had in mind until he took her hands and bowed his head. He prayed aloud, giving thanks for the pleasure they had taken in one another. Angel's heart hammered violently. What was his God going to think of this? When Michael finished praying, he smiled at her,
the glow in his eyes easing her fear. "No lightning, beloved," he said, understanding. "All good things come down from the Father, even this."
He lay back and drew her to him, holding her close until they both slept.
Chapter 24. From Jesus, the Gospel according to Matthew, chapter 5, verse 20. For I tell you, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the scribes and Pharisees, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Paul sat brooding before his fireplace, a jug in his lap and his wedding picture in his hand. Tessie had been gone 2 years now, and he wanted to keep her memory alive. He didn't want to forget what she looked like. But lately, until he held the picture, all he could remember was that she was dark and had Michael's smile. He tried to remember what her skin felt like and how her voice sounded, but it was all fading away, all except the sweet memory of what they had shared so briefly. The empty, aching loneliness she had left behind was all that remained firm. Laying the picture aside, Paul drew long on the whiskey. Leaning his head back, he closed his eyes wearily. He hadn't seen Michael since he had come and asked him to help him find Angel. He couldn't forget that day, or his own regret. "She's run off again?" "Yes, I have to find her." "Let her go. You're better off without a woman like her." Michael's eyes blazed. "When are you going to open your eyes?" "When are you?" Paul shot back. "If she loved you, don't you think she'd stay? You wouldn't be able to drive her out. Michael, when are you going to see what she is?" When Michael turned his horse away, his anger had erupted. "Look for her in a bordello. Isn't that where you found her in the first place?" Swearing, he'd gone back to turning the soil with his spade, and he hadn't been able to get rid of the fallow feeling in his heart since. Not even when Michael had come back. It was clear he hadn't found any trace of Angel. He had pitied Michael then. He wasn't sorry Michael hadn't found Angel. He was sorry Michael was torn up about losing her. She wasn't worth grieving over. "She does love me, Paul. She does. You just don't understand her." Paul left it alone. He didn't want to know any more about Angel than he already did. One day in her company had been enough to sour his soul for a lifetime. Michael stayed, and they talked about crops and the land, but it wasn't the same as it had been before Angel came into their lives. It didn't matter whether she was gone or not. She was still between them. "You're making progress," Michael said before leaving. "That field looks good." "The work would go faster with a horse. Too bad I lost mine on the trail." "Take this one." He took off the saddle while Paul stood dumbfounded. "As soon as your crops are in, you'll have enough to buy another." Ashamed, Paul couldn't speak past the lump in his throat. Michael shouldered the saddle. "You'd do the same for me, wouldn't you, Paul?" He headed for home. A few days later, Paul took a side of venison to the Altmans and learned Michael was on his way to Sacramento to bring Angel home. Joseph had sent word she was working in a general mercantile. A likely story. He'd bet everything she was selling herself to wintering miners. 6 ounces of gold for 15 minutes. Maybe more than that to make up for the time lost on Michael. "You don't look very happy about the news," Miriam said, watching him closely. "I'm sure Michael's happy," he said, and went for his horse. "He's a fool," he muttered under his breath. Miriam followed him. "He loves her very much."
"Is that what you call it?"
"What would you call it?"
He glanced back at Miriam as he slung the reins over the horse's head, but he didn't answer.
"Why don't you like Amanda?" Miriam asked. Paul almost blurted out that her name wasn't Amanda, it was Angel, and she was anything but that. But he kept his tongue.
"I've got my reasons," he said.
The saddle creaked as he mounted.
"You were in love with her, weren't you?" she said flatly. Paul gave a harsh laugh,
his grip tightening on the reins. Did she tell you that?
No, I guessed.
Well, you guessed wrong, little Miriam.
He turned his horse before she could ask more questions. Taking a step, she called after him, "Don't call me little Miriam. I'm 16 years old."
He didn't need the reminder.
Mocking her, he tipped his hat.
"Good day, ma'am," he drawled and rode away.
She came over the next morning to invite him to dinner. "Venison steaks," she said, "and Mama is baking apple pie." She was wearing a pretty yellow dress that made him notice the slender curves of her young body. She noticed the direction of his gaze and blushed. Miriam's dark eyes had a velvety glow to them.
"Well?" she said.
"Well what?" he said uneasily.
Her mouth curved.
"Will you come this afternoon?"
She had an enticing smile. Dismayed, he was terse.
"No," he said, and nodded toward the unplowed section of field. "I'll be working through until dusk."
He clicked to the horse and pushed down hard on the plow, hoping she would take the hint and leave. Had he known she was coming over, he would have put a shirt on. As it was, he was stripped to the waist and had a dusty neckerchief tied around his forehead to keep the sweat out of his eyes. A fine sight he was for an innocent young girl.
Paul couldn't get it out of his head that if Miriam Altman had come along a few months earlier, Michael wouldn't be in the mess he was in. Miriam was just right for Michael.
If that harlot ran off again, which she undoubtedly would, maybe Michael would come to see it, too. This girl would come to his marriage bed a virgin and stay faithful to him to death. She wasn't the kind to cause a man grief. She would give him the children he wanted and make him happy.
"You have to eat sometime," Miriam said, walking beside him.
He didn't look at her. The less he looked at her, the better.
"Papa and Mama would like to thank you."
"They said their thanks yesterday. Tell them they're welcome."
"Don't you like children?"
"Children?" he said, lost. "I like children well enough. What's that got to do with anything?"
"I just thought you didn't want to come to dinner because there are so many of us."
She walked with her hands loosely clasped behind her. His gaze swept her body, and his mouth went dry.
"What was your wife like, Paul?"
The question took him off guard. "Sweet. She was very sweet."
"Was she tall?"
"About your size."
Tessie had been smaller, and she'd had light brown hair rather than luxuriant black. And her eyes. He couldn't remember what color Tessie's eyes were when he looked into the deep, soft brown of Miriam's.
"Was she pretty?"
He looked at Miriam, and his heart raced.
"Your wife," she said. "Was she pretty?"
He tried to remember Tessie's face and couldn't. Not with Miriam staring at him the way she was. Her shy fascination with his body gave him a growing panic.
"She was very pretty," he said, and pulled the horse to an abrupt halt. "I think you better go home. I'm sure your mother's wondering why you're taking so long."
Miriam's face went red.
"I'm sorry," she stammered. "I didn't mean to keep you. Maybe you'll come for dinner another time."
He saw her quick tears as she turned and hurried away. He almost reached out to her, but stopped himself just in time. He clenched his hand and watched her go, an ache in the pit of his stomach. He hadn't meant to be cruel, but if he apologized, she might stay, and she was altogether too tempting for that. Paul never expected her to come back. He was washing at the well when he saw her coming across a grassy field. His heart jumped. Her younger sister Leah was with her this time. He pulled his shirt on and buttoned it while waiting for them to reach him and tell him what they wanted.
"Mama sent me," Miriam said apologetically. Her eyes barely touched his.
She held out the basket she was carrying.
"Thanks," he said roughly, taking it.
His hand lightly brushed hers, and her eyes came up.
"She needn't have bothered," he said.
Oh, it was Miriam's idea, Leah said, mortifying her older sister further.
Hush, Leah, Miriam said, blushing.
She took her sister's hand. We'd better go. Enjoy your dinner, Paul.
Paul watched the gentle sway of her hips. I've got no right to be feeling this way about a girl like her.
Tell your mother I'll bring the basket over.
No hurry, Miriam called back. I'll come get it tomorrow.
That was exactly what he didn't want her to do. He would ride over at first light and leave the basket at their door. He put it down and brought up another bucket of cold water. Dousing his face, he cooled himself down. He was in bad shape when just looking at a pretty 16-year-old girl made him feel this way. He ought to ride to the nearest camp and stop in at the local brothel. The very idea sickened him. He took Miriam's basket into the cabin. The grate was cold. He lit a fire and ate. He was feeling the same emptiness he had when Tessie died. Those first months without her had been bad, but he had had the struggle to survive the Sierras to occupy his mind. When he and Michael reached this land, he poured himself into building the cabin. Then the grief had struck hard. The fierce pain of loss had been too much. He couldn't look out at the fields of wildflowers without thinking how much Tessie would have loved it. Their own land in California had been a shared dream. It was empty and meaningless without her. When the gold rush hit, he was ready to leave. In the beginning, he had lost himself in the excitement of working the streams, the chance of getting rich just beyond his reach. The excitement quickly wore off. Life narrowed down again to dawn-to-dusk labor. All he made was enough for food and a day in town to get drunk and go to a brothel. Even while taking his pleasure, he couldn't rid himself of the pointlessness of his life and the shame of it. He knew what he bought was counterfeit. He knew because he had had the real thing with Tess. Angel's words came flooding back, hard and cold. I know what I am, mister, but you call yourself his brother. When he gave up looking for gold and came back here to his land, he thought he had hit rock bottom. He had been wrong. He swore to himself he would make it up to Michael. He would leave Miriam Altman alone, so that when the time came and Angel left him again, there would be a decent girl waiting for him. He tried to sleep, and couldn't. He couldn't get Miriam out of his head. He would close his eyes and see her dark, smiling eyes. Giving up, he put another log on the fire and took his wedding picture off the mantel. He stared at Tessie's face again. Although it was still precious to him, it roused no deep emotion, not as it had a year ago. A year ago, he hadn't thought the pain would ever go away. But then, a year ago, he thought he would never fall in love again.
Amanda! Miriam cried out, racing down the hillside. Come quick! It's Ruthie!
Angel ran toward her. What's happened?
She's up a tree and I can't get her down. Help me!
Angel raised her skirts and ran up the hill after Miriam. She was breathless when they reached the gnarled old oak. Heart in her throat, Angel looked up at the child perched 20 feet above on a thick branch.
Oh, how did you get up there, you little mouse?
Ruthie waved down at her.
Ruthie, Angel cried out in alarm. Hold on, don't you budge. We'll get you down.
I tried to climb and I couldn't, Miriam said. You give it a try.
Me? I've never climbed a tree in my life.
Mandy, are you going to help me down?
Ruthie called down.
You better hurry, Miriam said, pushing at her. There's no time to lose.
She bent and cupped her hands. Angel's skirts got in the way. Wait a minute. I can't do it like this.
She bent over, grabbed the back hem, and pulled it up between her legs, shoving it into her belt.
She climbed up onto the first branch with Miriam's help.
Don't be scared, Ruthie. Just don't move.
I won't,
Ruthie said, swinging her feet back and forth and seeming to have a wonderful time.
"What am I doing?" Angel muttered under her breath as she scrambled higher. She thought she heard laughter.
"Don't look down," Miriam called up to her. "You're doing fine."
Angel wasn't sure whether Miriam was speaking to her or Ruthie as she made her way up through the branches. When she was within a few feet, she saw that Ruthie had a rope tied around her waist, holding her securely to the trunk. She couldn't have fallen if she wanted to. What was worse, the little imp was grinning from ear to ear.
"Isn't it fun, Mandy?"
"Ever seen your cabin from this vantage point?" Miriam said, just below her. Angel's face flamed in anger. "You scared me half to death. What do you think you're doing?" Miriam climbed past her and straddled on a large branch. "You said it yourself. You've never climbed a tree in your life." She grinned mischievously. "It's about time you did."
"You pulled her up by yourself? She might have been hurt."
"We helped," Jacob said, coming down from a higher branch. Andrew was just above him, and Leah peeked out from behind the trunk. They all looked so pleased with themselves, she forgot her anger and laughed. "A tree full of magpies." Pulling herself up, she straddled a thick branch. "You did real well for your first time," Andrew said, walking along a limb. Angel gave him a mock frown. "You should be working with your father." "He gave me the day off. He wanted to take Mama out for a walk." Miriam laughed. "I told them we'd go for a walk instead." She lowered her voice, so only Angel could hear. "One of the disadvantages to having a one-room cabin is the lack of privacy." She leaned her head against the trunk. "When I get married, my husband and I are going to build a loft for the children, and we're going to have a nice, cozy bedroom next to the kitchen."
"There's Michael," Ruthie pointed.
The children shouted and whistled until he turned and looked up the hill. He strode toward them. When he reached the tree, he looked up, fists planted on his hips. "What's this?" He saw Angel aloft and laughed. "You too?"
"They tricked me," she said with great dignity.
Miriam winked at her and called down to him. "You're going to have to get her down. She's stuck." Angel laughed when she saw Michael pull his boots off and start up. When he was just beneath her, he slid his hand up her calf. "Shall I tie Ruthie's rope around you and lower you away?" he asked, knowing perfectly well she could make it down on her own. "This would make a great swing tree," Leah said, climbing down next to him. "See that big fat branch? You could tie the rope right there."
Good idea," Michael said.
He lowered Ruthie and sent Andrew to the tack room in the barn for rope. Climbing back up, he tied both ends around a sturdy branch and let the loop hang for a swing. "I'll fix a seat for it later," he said, dropping down. The children squabbled excitedly over who would get the first turn, but Michael caught Angel and set her in it. "Hang on," he told her before she could stop him, and he sent her flying. The exhilarating rush made her laugh. Michael gave her another push and then headed back to the field and his work. When everyone, including Miriam, had had a turn on the swing, Angel took the children down to the cabin and fixed them something to eat. The boys went out to watch Michael, and Leah and Ruthie went to pick flowers on the hill. Miriam leaned against the door jamb and looked out at her brothers perched on top of the corral fence, watching Michael working with the horse. "Michael knows how to enjoy life. He doesn't sit about brooding all the time." Angel came to stand with her. It disturbed her the way Miriam was watching Michael. An uncomfortable feeling twisted in her stomach. Miriam smiled. "I was thinking how wonderful it must be to love someone and have them love you back. I'll bet when Michael wants you, he does something about it." Blushing, she straightened from the door jamb. "Mama would faint dead away if she heard me talking like this." Angel looked out at Michael, and the pang of jealousy died down, and a tender concern filled her. She gave Miriam a thoughtful look. She loved the girl like a sister. You want to get married, don't you?
Yes, but I don't want to marry just anyone, Miriam said. I want someone wonderful. I want a man to love me the way Michael loves you. I want a man willing to fight for me. I want a man who won't let me walk away from him.
Seeing tears in Miriam's eyes, Angel took her hand.
You love Michael?
Of course I love him. How could I not? He's one of a kind, isn't he?
Miriam put her head back against the jamb and closed her eyes. Others should be more like him, but they're not. She smiled. I'll never forget the night Mama and I sang Amazing Grace and talked about David. Michael had tears in his eyes, and he wasn't embarrassed about it. He didn't care who saw how much he cared.
She wiped tears from her cheeks.
Michael's the only man I've ever met who isn't afraid to feel things. He doesn't bury himself alive.
Angel looked out at him. It's too bad I met him first. Miriam laughed.
Well, if you find the mold, would you make another like him?
She hugged Angel.
I love you both so much.
She drew back.
And now I've embarrassed you.
She bit her lip and looked uncertain.
Mama thinks I should keep my feelings to myself instead of blurting them out all the time, but I can't. It's just the way I am.
She kissed Angel's cheek.
I better gather the wild Indians and go.
She went out into the sunshine and called for her brothers and sisters. Hugging herself, Angel leaned against the door jamb where Miriam had been and watched them go. She worried about it all afternoon and tried to talk things over with Michael that night.
Do you think we could find a man for Miriam?
Miriam? She's a little young, isn't she?
Old enough to be in love. Could we go back to Sacramento and find someone?
Who? He said, playing with her hair.
Someone for Miriam.
How about Paul?
Paul?
Aghast, Angel moved away.
Miriam doesn't belong with someone like him. She belongs with someone like you.
I'm already taken, remember?
He pulled her close.
Leave it to the Lord.
Leave it to the Lord, she muttered. You always want to leave things to the Lord.
He could see she wasn't going to let go of it.
The Lord already has someone in mind for Miriam. I'm sure of it. Now put it out of your head.
She almost told him that Miriam was in love with him, but thought better of it. There was nothing more tantalizing to a man than a young girl in love with him.
I just want to see her happy and settled.
Michael soothed her.
She will be, Tirza. A girl like Miriam doesn't go without a husband for long.
A girl like Miriam.
If you hadn't found me, would you?
But I did, didn't I?
Yes, you did.
She reached up and touched his face. Have you ever been sorry?
A few times, he said solemnly, knowing she would expect the truth.
He took her hand and turned the wedding ring, looking down at her.
You've given me some dark moments. His smile was tender. But that's in the past.
He kissed her hand and laid it against his cheek.
Tirza, I know what I'm about, and I know who has control of my life. You and I are not an accident.
Angel pulled his head down and kissed him, loving his response, loving the way she felt when he took over.
I don't think I'll ever get enough of you, Michael Hosea. Never, as long as I live.
Nor I of you.
The Altmans held a gathering to celebrate spring planting. When Angel and Michael arrived, the children ran to greet them. Elizabeth waved from the open doorway.
Come see our new well, Leah said, tugging on Michael's hand.
Miriam was bringing up a bucket of water. She set it down.
Marvelous, isn't it? She said proudly. Paul helped us dig it a few weeks ago. I've missed having a well to sing into. Listen.
She bent over and sang down into the depths. The melodious sound broadened and rose. Rock of Ages.